The legal troubles of former Governor Rod Blagojevich prompted Illinois to move out of the Wild West of campaign finance. The state passed a law setting limits on contributions in 2009. I'm State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. From the onset, critics had problems with what they saw as loopholes, namely a lack of fundraising restrictions on the four tops. That's the four top legislators in the General Assembly during the general election. In 2012, the Liberty Justice Center sued over that. The center, I should point out, is an arm of the Conservative Illinois Policy Institute. That's an organization that doesn't have to unveil its funders, but current Governor Bruce Rauner has contributed to it in the past, and he and the Institute have deep links to a couple of political action committees, or PACs, that have had a lot of money to spend in the past couple election cycles. That's something you may want to keep in mind as you listen to this partial interview with the center's attorney, Jacob Hubert, about the lawsuit.
Well, the main problem with the campaign contribution limits the Illinois General Assembly passed is that they restrict what everyone in Illinois can give to a candidate, except for the state's political parties and the state's legislative leaders who have special committees they can use to make much higher contributions than anybody else in a primary election, and unlimited contributions in a general election. So that's one big problem. That alone very much tilts the political playing field in favor of the political parties and the candidates that they favor, and the leaders and the candidates they favor, and overall will tend to favor incumbents over would-be challengers. Another problem with this law is that these contribution limits all go away under certain circumstances. In a race for statewide office, if a self-financed candidate spends more than $250,000 of his or her own money on their campaign, then all the limits go away in that race. Or if an independent group spends $250,000 or more on advertising about the candidates in a campaign, then suddenly all the limits go away. And the reason for this is because normally the effect of campaign contribution limits is to protect, and even if they're apparently fair, even if they don't have an exception for legislative leaders like Illinois does, they'll tend to benefit incumbents because incumbents have a lot of advantages over challengers. They have name recognition. They can put their name out there on things. They can send newsletters to their constituents. They have lots of ways to advertise that don't cost them money. And so if you can limit what everybody spends, that actually is a big advantage to the incumbent. But that doesn't work if an incumbent is faced with a challenger who can spend as much of his money as he wants, or because you can spend as much of your own money as you want on a campaign, or there's an independent group that can spend unlimited money that gets involved. Then the limits don't have their intended effect of protecting incumbents. And so then, conveniently, under those circumstances, the limits all go away, and suddenly the state doesn't care about the supposed corrupting effect of campaign contributions over certain amounts anymore. So that's another problem. It's set up in a way that really is just an incumbent protection scheme and reveals that it's not really directed at limiting corruption, because if it were, they wouldn't take these limits away when under circumstances where incumbents are threatened. And then another problem with this law is that it allows corporations to contribute double the amount to a candidate that an individual can contribute, which doesn't make any sense if these limits are designed to limit corruption, because there's no reason to think that corporations' contributions are going to be less potentially corrupting than an individual's contributions. If anything, people's intuition would be the opposite of that, because corporations, of course, have economic interests they're looking out for, whereas individuals might just have ideological concerns. So those are the big three problems with this law and the grounds on which we challenged it.
A U.S. district court judge denied the center's challenge. The trial centered on the lack of limits on legislative leaders' caucus committees. Justice Gary Finerman ruled due to the leaders' roles, it's acceptable that they're free from the restrictions put on individuals and other PACs. Here's Hubert's argument against that.
The whole theory behind campaign contribution limits is that they limit corruption. And the Supreme Court has said that's the only purpose you can try to serve with campaign contributions, doing what you need to limit corruption. And
because otherwise money is speech and shouldn't be limited.
That's right. And so there's no reason to think that a contribution from a legislative leader using a legislative caucus committee would be less potentially corrupting than a contribution to a candidate by a political action committee, say. Because in either situation, someone is in a position to say to the person receiving the contribution, you do what I want, or I won't give you this contribution. And the threat is actually a lot greater in the situation where these legislative caucus committees are uniquely able to give unlimited contributions. Because when you have that power, you really can make or break a candidate. You can say, well, I can give unlimited money to you, or I can give unlimited money to your opponent. And if you're in that position, of course, you can make a lot of demands on that person to get that money. And unfortunately, the court's decision didn't account for that. And in our view, that shows that this is not, again, not designed to limit corruption. It's designed to make sure that certain people are able to exercise a lot of power with their contributions while everybody else is limited.
So the court pushed back on a couple of those contentions. For one, the assertion that a legislative leader has the ability to punish somebody by giving them a bad committee assignment or maybe a pulling of a committee chairmanship, which in Illinois, if you're a committee chair, you get an extra stipend. And so that would be literally a bang in a legislator's wallet. The court says already legislative leaders have these institutional controls. So it's not just that there is anything special when it comes to their having control over this money in a campaign.
Well, they do have other tools they can use to reward and punish members of their party in the legislature, but the unlimited spending is a extremely powerful tool as well. And the fact that they can also do these other rewards and punishments doesn't mean that the contributions aren't a powerful tool as well to get things from members. And it's also a tool by which they can maintain their power, because nobody else, if somebody else wants to be speaker or minority leader or whatever, they don't have that same fundraising power they can use to fight back, to try to have different leadership. So it really is a unique tool to make them, to help them keep control. And by the way, ordinary legislators are allowed to form their own political action committees that they can use to make contributions. But when an ordinary legislator has a PAC, they face the same limit as every other kind of PAC. They're not unlimited like the leaders. And that doesn't really make sense. Why is it that if an ordinary legislator gets his own committee that he uses to make contributions, we do think that's potentially corruption, but when the legislator is one of the leaders, we don't think there's any corruption at all, and they could spend unlimited amounts. It doesn't make any sense.
The court seemed to say that, you know, a legislative leader is elected within the caucus, and if the leader is not using money in the best interest of the caucus and its election hopes and future and sustainability expanding, that then the legislative leader would be voted out, either by its own voters or by legislators themselves would pull that position.
Well, it's not that simple, because if you challenge the leader and fail, of course, you're in big trouble. And it's difficult to mount that challenge, again, because the leader has control over so much money. It's very easy for the leader to be in a position to effectively buy off people who, or threaten people who would challenge his leadership. And so this ability to give all this money helps them stay in that position. They can use it to maintain their own power. So it's not really true that, oh, well, they can just vote him out. the fact that he has this power is a reason why it's very hard to vote him out, either by voters or by others in the caucus.
A lot of the case by the Liberty Justice Center was based on studies by a political scientist who'd done some research on this. And the court indicated that the research didn't go far enough. And in fact, that had Dr. Osborne gone further in his research, that there would have been new evidence unveiled that the results of which would have, quote, undermined his theory. What is your response to the court's arguments there, that this analysis simply doesn't hold up?
Well, our experts' analysis didn't depend on which contributions any particular committee has actually made in Illinois. This scheme has been in place in Illinois a very short time, and so our expert was very clear that there really just isn't data enough to do a sort of quantitative study of all this in Illinois and how it's working. He looked a little bit at the data and said, yes, I see some things here that are consistent with what I would expect. But he said that we don't have the kind of years of data over multiple election cycles that you'd really need to do the kind of study of the data. So, and he was very clear that his analysis didn't depend on that. His analysis was based on the structure of the way that this is set up and the way that legislative leaders and legislative caucuses work in general. But also, he pointed out that ordinarily you would expect a regular political party committee and a legislative leaders committee to behave in somewhat different ways, have somewhat different patterns in the contributions they receive and the contributions they make. But Illinois is different because here you have the unique situation where the same person, Michael Madigan, runs both the state Democratic Party and his legislative caucus committee. So, of course, both of those committees are going to reflect the same, likely to reflect the same kind of strategies because you have the same person in charge with a just really unique amount of power that one individual very rarely has. And so Michael Madigan is in an unusual position to use both the state Democratic Party and a legislative caucus committee to serve his interests.
Speaking of ways that Illinois is a bit different than other states, how does this stack up in particular, as you've noted, the limits and when they are lifted for legislative leaders? How does that compare to other states in their campaign finance laws?
We looked at all of the states and their rules on this sort of thing, and the only state that gives its legislative leaders a comparable advantage over everybody else in spending is New Jersey, a state also not particularly known for, you know, clean, good government, a state also widely associated with corruption, and maybe that's no coincidence. Most states either put even limits on everybody, or if they do give legislative leaders ability to do a little more, it's only like somewhat more. It's not grossly disproportionate or unlimited the way that it is in Illinois.
This comes at a time where vast amounts of dollars that are swirling around this campaign cycle, and of course, a lot of that is in control of the legislative leaders. I believe at last check, various committees under control of Madigan had about $8 million. Cullerton had about $6 million, but that dwarfs the money that Governor Bruce Rauner has put into the cycle. And in fact, he was one of those individuals that lifted the limits on his opponent when he was running because of his self-funding. You know, when you do have somebody who is self-funding and there's no limits into how much an individual can put into his or her own campaign, how would you not lift limits? How would, for example, Pat Quinn have been able to compete against Bruce Rauner's various millions of dollars? Or how could, without the legislative leaders having this freedom, they be able to compete against a party that is getting so much money from a single source?
Well, it's a reason to consider whether you really need these limits. But the Supreme Court has said that the only basis for having campaign contribution limits is to limit corruption. And there's no threat of corruption when a candidate is funding himself or herself because you can't corrupt yourself with money. And so there's no justification for limiting them. But if Illinois thinks there is a reason to limit other people based on the potential for corruption, then it can do it. But you have to be aware that there's other people who aren't going to be limited because they're self-funding like this, where there's no threat of corruption. But this is really a reason to not have campaign contribution limits, because it does result in these kinds of situations where the only people who can challenge the established incumbents are billionaires who can afford to fund their own campaigns. That's the only way you can do it now, is if you're independently wealthy. And it shouldn't be that way. It should be that if somebody wants to challenge the establishment, that they maybe could get a number of people to back them with a lot of money instead of having to be independently wealthy themselves. We've seen this in American history, for example, with Eugene McCarthy's campaign opposing the Vietnam War and the Democratic Party presidential primary in 1968. He was able to do that and be very influential because he got a number of wealthy backers to boost his anti-war campaign when the establishment was against that. And so it is unfair that only a billionaire can come in and do this sort of thing. But the solution is to get rid of these limits, recognizing that they don't really serve to limit corruption that much. And what they really do serve to do is protect incumbents from challenges.
What is the next step?
The next step will be to appeal the district court's decision to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And we'll raise all of our arguments again there.
That's Jacob Hubert, an attorney with the Conservative Liberty Justice Center, which is suing over Illinois' campaign finance law. I'm Amanda Vinicky.